Blog Talk Radio.
Promotes health awareness through our weekly discussion. Healthy 365 does not provide medical advice. Please consult your health provider for all your medical concerns and needs. Welcome, friends, to tonight's edition of Healthy 365. Today, we will be discussing polycystic ovarian syndrome, also known as PCOS. This topic is close to me because it is a condition, unfortunately, I was recently diagnosed with. And so I really have a lot of interest in the research and the other things behind it. And unfortunately, I wasn't diagnosed until I was in my late 30s. And so I kind of was fumbling around trying to figure out exactly what was wrong with me, really, ever since I hit puberty. So I really thought about when I seen the statistics of how many women are affected with PCOS, I thought, I wonder if this knowledge can help someone else who may be an adolescent or an adult or an older adult facing middle age who, just has these symptoms and they can't quite figure out what's wrong. They know something is wrong, but they can't figure out what's wrong. So that's kind of why in my description, I wanted women to know more than anything, you know, it's not your fault, the changes that you may experience and some of the things that you may go through. It is a metabolic disorder. And so let's kind of dig into it. We have an hour and a half together. Thank you for joining me. I'm coming to you live from Huntsville, Alabama, and we are definitely beginning the fall season. It is cool here today. I lived in the Midwest for several years, so I know all of my family and friends in Chicago are like, girl, please. So but it's chilly here for us here in Bama. It's I think it's been getting down to about 30 something degrees overnight and 40, and so that's cool here for the Tennessee Valley. But I'm glad that all of you are joining me today on this Sunday. PCOS, again, it's called polycystic ovarian syndrome, is a health condition that affects about 10 million women worldwide. And unfortunately, the exact cause of the condition, they say, is unknown. And it's considered a metabolic disorder, so that means it's caused by a hormonal problem. And there are some genetics at play here and environmental factors that are involved in the development of the condition. I found some really interesting studies, too, that I want to share because I always like to share additional facts or unknown facts about the conditions and the things that we talk about. It's a leading cause, it said, of infertility in women, and it's responsible for a number of symptoms that affect the body physically and emotionally. Now, when we talk about metabolic disorders, and we know that's caused by a hormonal problem, you may be thinking, well, you know, what hormones are involved in the condition? So here are the hormones that are actually involved in PCOS. The first is called androgens, and these are hormones that everybody produces. And so in women, many of you may know this, hormones called androgens are basically known as male hormones. And these are androgens are produced by the ovaries. And unfortunately, women who suffer from PCOS have a higher level of androgens. So this excess of androgens or male hormones, which again are produced by the ovaries, but also it's important to know that a gland in the body called the adrenal gland can also be involved in producing the excess androgens. And so these extra androgens can cause many symptoms of this condition in women. And so these are some of the things that you may notice. And we'll touch on this again a little bit later. But Some of the symptoms include unwanted hair, acne, which just sucks, you know, thinning of the hair, and irregular periods. Okay, so those are the male hormones that when your body produces too much of them, so the ovaries are producing too much of the androgen hormone or the male hormone. Those are the symptoms that you can actually see. Insulin is another hormone that is affected by this condition. And so many of you know about insulin because of the condition diabetes. And so insulin is a hormone that is produced by the pancreas. Okay. And the pancreas produces insulin because it allows the body to absorb glucose. And so glucose, you know, we hear about it quite a bit. But glucose is just a fancy name for blood sugar. Okay. So it's literally sugar in the blood. So when you think about blood sugar, think of it as little fuel capsules. Okay. It's basically how our body converts the sugar into energy. So the insulin is swimming around and along in your blood. And we need, glucose is swimming around in your blood. I'm sorry, people. The glucose is swimming around in your blood, and the insulin is the hormone that allows the sugar or the energy, okay, to absorb into the cells. And that's how your body gets energy to do things and to function, okay? So basically, when we eat, glucose levels rise, and then insulin is released by the pancreas into the bloodstream, okay? And insulin is important because it helps our body maintain a normal blood sugar level. And it also prevents the levels from being unstable. So that could be too low of a blood sugar, which you may know is called hypoglycemia, or too high, which is called hyperglycemia. So unfortunately, women who have PCOS, their body isn't as responsive to the insulin that their body produces. So their body's just not receptive or responding appropriately to the insulin. And so as a result, they can have high levels of blood glucose. And this can cause the body to, in turn, because it's this is a metabolic disorder, okay? It can cause the body to produce more insulin. Because you got to think, your body's like, oh, okay. All right, you're not really responding to the insulin. Let's try to fix things. So I'm going to shoot some more insulin in your bloodstream. Maybe that'll help. So the body is basically trying to heal itself, and it's trying to kind of balance things out. And so unfortunately, the way the disorder works, then the body has too much insulin. Now, it's important to know that having too much insulin can cause the body to make more androgens. So you kind of see where I'm going here? This is like a vicious cycle. So we have too many androgens possibly, okay, causing all these unwanted symptoms. And then as a result, we've got the body not able to respond the right way to insulin because of the disorder. And so now with all the insulin, that's causing the ovaries to say, shoot some more androgens. So you can kind of see how the condition can just be a complete mess. Another hormone that is involved in PCOS is something called progesterone. Now, this is basically like the female hormone. A lot of you probably have heard of this hormone before, because if you've ever gone to your doctor or to an organization for, you know, when you decide to have sex or you have puberty, you go to your wonderful places and resources like Planned Parenthood or a clinic, and they give you a birth control, so a contraceptive, okay? And so basically a birth control pill will have hormones in it. And one of the hormones they have in it is progesterone. And this kind of helps the body with the periods and the menstrual cycle and everything. So progesterone is a hormone in the body, and it's made by the ovaries, just like the male hormone, like the androgens. And it's also produced, which is interesting, a lot of you may not know, it's also produced by the placenta. So if you get pregnant and you're going to have a baby, the placenta then would take over. And the adrenal glands can also help make progesterone, okay? And so one of the things that progesterone does is it regulates the period, okay? It also helps with thickening the lining of the uterus every month. So That's going to be important if you are going to have a baby, because it is going to help regulate the functions of to help you have a healthy pregnancy. Okay, so it'll help the woman maintain a pregnancy. And so the progesterone is released by the placenta to maintain the pregnancy and help keep the levels elevated to a woman who's pregnant. So it basically helps the levels stay normal. And so one of the things it can actually do is also help prevent a miscarriage. So you can see how these three hormones, the male hormone, androgens, insulin, which is important for our bodies to be able to consume blood sugar, so the sugar, so we can have energy, and then progesterone. So you've got the male and female hormones, and then the way our body gets energy. So if you can kind of think for a moment where we may be going here, some of the symptoms that I'll let you think to yourself on maybe some of the symptoms that someone can have with this condition, okay? So those are the three hormones that are involved. And so you may ask, what are some of the symptoms? And we've kind of touched on it a little bit by talking about the hormones. And when do they first appear? So I found this interesting that symptoms of PCOS may begin shortly after puberty. And then I'll kind of tie this in to another really interesting article that I read. And it said here, I found this interesting. This is actually from January of this year. And it's through a wonderful organization. I'm probably not going to pronounce their name right. But it's Levenaire, I believe is how you pronounce it, .org. And it is a organization that helps. It's a children's hospital. It's actually a Methodist healthcare group that helps parents, so adolescents, since we're talking about when it can first appear for puberty, it can help them determine whether their daughter has developed this condition. And so it says here on their page, it says, could your teen daughter have this endocrine disorder? And so it talks about some things. It tells you that it's a common endocrine disorder among women of reproductive age, and it can present as early as adolescence. It says that it can start after puberty, and a diagnosis can be made as early as 2 years after a girl's first menstrual cycle. And so we'll kind of talk about the symptoms as well. But what I really found that was really interesting is they have a statistic on their page, and it says that there's an increased risk for PCOS development in young girls if the child's mother has PCOS, and for girls who were born small for their gestational age. So these are babies that were preterm babies, babies that were born early. And also, it can develop in girls who have early pubic hair development. Okay, so this is really important for me because I'm a mom and I have it, and I kind of have an inclination that maybe it's genetic. So maybe I inherited it. And now I have a daughter, and so my first concern is like, oh my goodness, I've got to get a handle on this and kind of gain understanding about this because I have a daughter, and more than likely, she will develop this condition, you know. So it'll give you some tips if you are someone as we kind of explore this condition, and if you think you may have it or you may have it, it will kind of let you know, should you be concerned. Another thing that I found really interesting was a genetic study that I found, because then I started thinking, okay, if it affects your girls that you may have, what about your boys? I found this really interesting. It said that there were two studies on polycystic ovarian syndrome that may have shed some light on the causes and the effects it has on brothers of women with the condition. So I have a son as well, and he's my oldest. And so it says researchers have found evidence that the chronic disease in either a mother or father, and who knew that it can happen in a father as well, can create unfavorable conditions in the womb that are associated with the development of polycystic ovarian syndrome in their daughters. In another study, researchers found that brothers of women with PCOS and insulin resistance, and we talked about insulin resistance, that's basically where your body doesn't respond appropriately to insulin, okay? And insulin resistance are themselves at greater risk of developing insulin resistance or diabetes. So what that's saying is that my son, okay, if my daughter develops PCOS, okay, or because I have PCOS, okay, he can develop insulin resistance, or diabetes. So that lets me know that I also need to have a talk with my son because he's at higher risk of developing insulin resistance or diabetes. It said that two studies were presented at a 25th meeting in European Society and a Human Reproduction Conference in Amsterdam. And they said that they had done some clinical studies of women with reproductive problems and found a growth restriction associated with the development of PCOS symptoms in daughters, and that problems during pregnancy and in the way the mother adapts to the metabolic challenge of pregnancy can indicate the future cardiovascular health of both the mother and the child. What they don't know is whether giving birth to a daughter who later develops PCOS is associated with increased long-term cardiovascular disease risk in the mother, nor do we know whether the condition underlying chronic, whether conditions or underlying chronic disease in the father increases the risk of PCOS. See, I don't know because I have it, and then I don't know how I got it. You know, I don't know if I inherited it from my mother or if it's, you know, passed on through our family. You know, but I've seen some other studies that, you know, they're pretty, you know, sound in that if you have it, there's a higher likelihood that your daughters will get it. But I found, you know, I found that interesting as well, that you're at higher risk for cardiovascular disease. And I, you know, not to get too personal, but I remember thinking when I carried both of my children that, you know, some women, they have a really easy time. And I can't speak for all women, but what I do know is that sometimes as women, we can take on so much and internalize so many things, and things are, we're led to believe sometimes, or things are represented sometimes, like they're just so easy, you know, like they're almost like a rite of passage, you know, as a girl, you know, they don't, they're now starting to really promote empowerment and be all you can be and you can be anything, but very much the society norms put these pressures on you that, you know, you have to be a mom and you have to be a wife. And then now it's also a need for your identity and what you need for yourself and for your own accomplishments and your own goals and your own desires. You want to be successful. And sometimes there's a lot of guilt that goes behind with how to balance out what your needs are as a woman and, you know, what will be deemed as selfish or self-serving and kind of how to balance that. Because the biggest thing, and I think, when a woman decides to be a mom or to be a wife is, you know, what about me? A lot of times as women, you know, we're caregivers, we're the caretakers, we're the people that that take care of everybody. And so as a result, a lot of times then we get lost. And so our needs get lost and our identity can easily get lost because it becomes about your husband or about your mate or partner, or it becomes about your children. And so what I found is when I would struggle with things, like maybe I didn't really want to get married, but it was the pressures all around me to get married. Or maybe I didn't really want to have children. It's like sometimes that's still taboo. Like, who can you say that to? If you look around and this friend or this colleague or this associate, you know, they're having children and they're, you know, to your face, especially now with things like social media avenues like Facebook, and years ago it was MySpace. You have everybody representing this image. Chris Rock called it, you know, a lot of times he said, like, when you're dating someone, you don't meet them, you meet their representative. And so I think what I see a lot on social media, like Twitter and Facebook, I see people's representative. You know, you all know the girl that's a whore, but yet she's representing that she's some wholesome person, and she's on Sunday, she's praising the Lord and, you know, praise be to God, and the preacher said this and that, but you know she's twerking it and dropping it like it's hot, and she's being passed around, and that's just her lifestyle. But boy, on Sunday on Facebook, you get the scriptures and God fearing, and you're the one getting all those creepy things from her saying, you know, don't pass this away or God won't bless you. But you know, she's not living that life, you know. Or you get the guy that you know is broke, and he's taking pictures and, you know, taking, you know, they're doing a whole lot of misrepresenting of who they are. And so I think about that, you know, the pressures as a woman, you know, as a mom, you know, It's not easy. It was not easy for me to have a child, to carry a child. I did not like being pregnant. I was miserable. My hormones were all over the place. And to think that now I learned that I have this condition, and here I am carrying a life and internalizing all of this, and both times just feeling like, I hate this. I'm tired all the time. I'm having all these complications. I don't feel well. You know, I don't feel like myself. I feel like I'm being, for lack of a better description, I feel like I'm being attacked from the inside out. This is horrible. This sucks. Who said that this is beautiful? Yeah, I love my child and I want them to be healthy, and I'm excited and nervous and scared and I'm anxious to meet them. But what the hell? Can somebody else do this for me? I mean, that's really what I felt, you know? Not to mention, I had a lot of problems with mood and depression, and it was just a lot. And so for me, my choice, I don't want any more children. You know, I knew that I had a son at a very young age, and I knew I wanted a daughter, but I don't want any more children. I don't, because I just have things career-wise and things goal-wise that I want to focus on, and all the sacrificing. And I'm just so proud of, like, platforms like this and the movement that we're having in the community for women right now, that it's okay to say that. You know, it's okay to say that it's hard. It's okay to say sometimes you don't want to be a parent. It's okay to say you don't want to be somebody's wife. It's okay to say that you just want to be left alone. It's okay, ladies, to say that you just want to fuck and you don't want a relationship. So I just want women to understand that you have every right to feel empowered and just to be and be who you are. That's all I want to do, is make sure that I share my voice so I can empower others so that they know that they can share their voice, that you don't have to subject yourself to societal norms. You don't have to be less than for anyone. You don't have to objectify yourself to for the love of a man or for attention. And so that's really the values and the things that I want to instill to my daughters, but what I hope to give through this platform to other women. You don't have to. You're enough. You're beautiful. You're amazing. You're wonderful. You're smart. You can do anything you want to be. You're not an object. You're more than just your vagina and your breasts. You have so much more to offer. You're not a bad person if you don't want to have children. If you want to dedicate your life, such as Oprah Winfrey, to helping others, and you want to be a pet parent, or if you don't, so what? You know, that is your choice. You have a right to stand in your own truth and be the best damn you that you can be, and nobody has a right to make you feel bad about it. So a lot of my focus and things will be here about women empowerment, and I'm so happy to be a part of this platform when, let's see, one, two, three. Three of the four hosts on this network are women, so yay to that. But, you know, it really just started me thinking about those different things as I looked into this condition that, frankly, because I am a nurse, they say that we're not the best patients. So I'm not a good patient. You know, I don't like medicine. I'm stubborn. I don't like to be told what to do. I'm complacent. I acknowledge that. And I'm a bit of a procrastinator. And if something is overwhelming, it becomes unpleasant to me, and I kind of put it on the back burner, and I'd rather deal with something else. So sometimes, rather than deal with my stuff, I'd rather help my daughter with her project or focus on what's going on with my son, because it's just easier, you know? So I admit that. So, like I said, I'm happy to go on this journey with all of you. And this particular topic, because it is personal for me and it'll be a part of my personal journey, I will be blogging about it in the future and keeping you guys updated on things, like if I find out about some great tips and holistic things that you can do to combat this. Because women, hello, we're hormonal. So there's all these different things that make us up and make us so beautiful and complicated, the beautiful beings that we are. I'm going to share that with you all. So I'm looking into things right now. I'm a Virgo, so I plan things. I'm type A and everything. I'm a bit of a control freak, so I have to kind of like plot what I'm going to do and make a plan. So this is kind of just like an introductory into my journey and what I'm going on, what I have going on at this time. And so I want to keep you all posted, and I've networked with some wonderful women who have other conditions that, you know, I won't disclose about them, but they are helping me on my journey with kind of finding my way and how to manage things like this. So stay tuned. There's more to come about that, and I want to share that with you because I'm sure it's something you, I mean, you think about diabetes, you can manage it through healthy lifestyle choices. You know, you think about high blood pressure, you think about heart disease, you think about this condition. I know all of these things can be managed holistically because I know that I come from a long line of very wonderful, strong women, and they didn't run to a doctor for everything. They use nature, and they use their knowledge, and they use their conviction and their determination, and they were able to manage things and overcome. So I know that by networking with other amazing women that I can manage this and I can figure it out, you know. So let's get back to the symptoms. I'm sorry if I kind of made a rant. Some of the symptoms that are included with this condition is weight gain. That was my biggie. It says about half of all women who have PCOS will have weight gain and obesity that is difficult to manage. So don't beat yourself up, ladies. You know, it's tough, okay? It can be tough. You may go up and down and all these different things, okay? So it's not your fault. Fatigue, okay? Many women with PCOS report increased fatigue and low energy. Additionally, it says women may suffer from poor sleep, which in turn is like a vicious cycle. It contributes to feeling of fatigue. The next one is unwanted hair growth. This is another biggie. And I'm going to be honest, I hate this shit. I mean, I had my last child, and I'm just like, oh, my gosh, what the hell is happening to me? I felt, you know, but, hey, now I know it wasn't just the baby and the hormones. It was this damn condition, too. So unwanted hair growth, which is called hirsutism, okay, that's H-I-R-S-U-T-I-S-M, and the hair will appear in horrible places. You can have the hair on your face, you can have it on your arms, you can have it on your back, you can have it on your chest, thumbs, toes, and abdomen. You basically feel like a fucking werewolf, that's basically. And this is related to PCOS causing the hormonal changes. So this is all due to that androgen stuff, the male hormone. Okay, thinning of the hair on the head, okay, or hair loss related to PCOS may increase in middle age. They call that androgenic alopecia. So alopecia, it sounds cute, but it's not. It's basically hair loss. And so there is some androgenic, which, again, kind of lets you know, based on the hormones, the androgens, causing the hair loss or the thinning on the hair. And in that medical study, just saying, if you have PCOS and you have sons, it can be why they develop pre-baldness. So they have you to thank for that, not their dad necessarily. Infertility, PCOS, is a leading cause of female infertility. But it's important to know that not every woman with PCOS is the same. So some may require fertility treatments, and some may be able to conceive naturally. I was very fortunate. I mean, I was able to conceive. I mean, like I said, it was difficult. I had difficult pregnancies, but I was able to conceive. And that's one of the reasons I remember before I even became a nurse, I think, hearing about this condition. But I remember thinking, well, I had a baby. You know, I didn't know any better. I was young. Well, I had a baby, so I don't think I had that condition, but I was wrong. I also remember hearing about, you know, you have to have, thinking, oh, you have to have cysts, which we'll talk about in a little bit. You actually don't have to have the cysts to have the condition. Another symptom is acne. So with the hormonal changes, and again, this is those androgens, it can lead to acne problems. Other skin changes, such as the development of skin tags. Yeah, those are those creepy little fleshy-looking things. They're usually darker, or they can be flesh-colored, and they hang down. Yeah, those suck. And darkened patches of skin are also related to PCOS. So if you are someone, like, for example, if your vagina was lighter and then it's darker, that could be a sign of PCOS. If you have the dark discoloration, mostly in women, especially women of color, okay, you will see like darkened areas on the back of your neck. People will tell you that's due to diabetes, but that is not true. That, yeah, it could be diabetes, but the cause of the insulin resistance, okay, that led to prediabetes, that led to diabetes, which is, you know, if you're not born with the condition, it's type 2 diabetes, is from PCOS, okay? So if you have that, and you may see that, you'll see like the darkening around the back of the neck and the front of the neck. No, it's not because you're fat or something. It's the darkening due to the hormones, due to this condition, okay? All of that is due to those excess androgens, okay? Mood changes. Hello, I can be a bitch, okay? That's me. Having PCOS can increase the likelihood of mood swings, depression, and anxiety. I'm like all of that. Sometimes I'm like a Tasmanian devil. I just don't even get out of the bed because I scare myself, okay? So don't beat yourself up. The PCOS causes mood changes. Pelvic pain or pelvic pain, mainly during the periods, or having heavy bleeding along with the pelvic pain or discomfort. It can also occur when a woman's not bleeding. So you may feel like pain or heaviness down there on the pelvic floor, just like pressure down there. That's another symptom of PCOS. Headaches, this is a big one. Hormonal changes can cause headaches. This one is important. It also talks about sleep problems with women with PCOS. So it says here that many women report sleep difficulty and insomnia. So insomnia is difficulty getting sleep, okay? Or where you wake up in the night, your sleep is interrupted, and then you can't get back to sleep. That's insomnia. So there are many factors that can affect sleep, but PCOS has been linked to a sleep disorder, okay, that affects sleep called sleep apnea. And sleep apnea is a condition where a person actually stops breathing for short periods of time during their sleep. And we'll talk about this a little bit more because we're going to break a lot of these symptoms and these things down. Additionally, it's important to know that typically women with PCOS, they have irregular or missed periods as a result of not ovulating. Although some women develop cysts, not everyone does. Okay. Also, it's important to know that PCOS often goes undiagnosed for some time because the symptoms may be attributed to other causes or go unnoticed. And I am a poster child for that. I'm telling you, I was not diagnosed until a year ago. So there you go. And because I'm a procrastinator, I just didn't want to deal with it. So here we go. So this is my way of dealing with it. This is therapeutic for me. I'm going to take a quick break, give some honor and acknowledgement to our wonderful sponsors that we could not do this beautiful platform without, which would be Digital Guard. I'm an advocate for safety and protecting yourself. So let's do a quick break, and we'll go hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back and explore some more of our topic.
Did you know that most burglaries occur between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m.? Home alarm systems don't prevent burglaries. Alarm companies call the police after a break-in occurs. Be proactive. Get a Digital Guard wireless HD home camera system with monitoring. We offer two convenient purchasing options. You can purchase your very own system today for as low as $684.63, or lease a system with no credit check for just $275 down and 14 monthly payments of $50. So don't wait. Call Digital Guard today at 888-640-577, option 2, and don't forget to mention the promo code Nicole. That number again is 888-640-5777, option 2, because what you can't see will hurt you.
Hi, welcome back to Healthy 365. I'm your host, Nicole Lee, and today we're talking about PCOS. And we talked about some common symptoms that you can see with that condition. PCOS is a metabolic disorder found in women. More than, I believe they said the latest numbers were 10 million women in the world suffer from this condition. And so the condition can be a little deceptive in that it's called polycystic ovarian syndrome, but not all women will develop ovarian cysts. So let's kind of just touch a little bit on what an ovarian cyst is. So a cyst, okay, is basically a fluid-filled sac, and it can develop anywhere in the body, Okay, so if you hear someone saying, I have cysts here or there, it's basically a fluid-filled sac. And so for women with PCOS, they can develop ovarian cysts. So just like it sounds, they can develop filled sacs of fluid on their ovaries. And so what causes this is because women often have trouble with regular periods or ovulation, and so they can develop if a woman is not releasing an egg over time. So what will happen is the follicles will keep growing and form multiple cysts. And so what will happen is on an ultrasound, which is basically just a picture, okay, of a part of someone's body, a medical picture. So on an ultrasound, they will they may be described as looking like a string of pearls, okay? So again, and I just touched on this, despite the name of the condition, women with PCOS, they don't need to have ovarian cysts. It's also important to know, women, that PCOS, without PCOS, I'm sorry, you can develop cysts for other reasons. So you, because you have cysts, okay, that doesn't mean that you have PCOS. There's other factors that your doctor has to find to determine if you have the condition, okay? The most common type of ovarian cysts are called functional cysts, and these are called functional cysts because they develop during the menstrual cycle, okay? Okay, so there's two types of functional cysts, okay? There's a follicular cyst, and these typically disappear on their own, so nothing to be concerned about, after 1 to 3 months. These can form after an egg doesn't get released and the follicle just keeps growing, okay? There's another one called a corpus luteum cyst, and these usually, as well, they go away on their own, and these form after the follicle ruptures. So the follicle, it actually ruptures and releases the egg. That's called ovulation, okay? So that's what happens to you, all right? The follicle in someone that develops this type of cyst, the follicle reseals, and then fluid starts to build up within that follicle, okay? And these can enlarge and cause pain, bleeding, or even twist the ovary. So this can be serious because this can affect your ovaries. So, of course, your ovaries are important for the release of eggs for you to be able to have a baby. So if it's twisting the ovary or causing complications, this can in turn cause the infertility in women that have PCOS, okay? Or in a woman that develops these types of cysts can have infertility. So it says here that the use of fertility medications can promote ovulation and increase the chances of developing, decrease the chance of developing these types of cysts. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me back it up. Let me correct myself. I'm sorry. The use of fertility medications, okay, because commonly women with PCOS are using fertility drugs and fertility treatments to get pregnant, okay, to promote ovulation. So these type of cysts can, this is the corpus luteum cyst, can develop in women who use fertility medications. And so it increased the likelihood. So your doctor will want to check you regularly to rule out these types of cysts if you're on fertility medications, okay? It also is important to know that ovarian cysts can also develop from a condition called endometriosis, which is formed from the outer surface of the ovary or formed with a non-ovarian tissue, okay? So those are two different types as well. And endometriosis, I'm not going to go into that condition. I do know many beautiful women that suffer from endometriosis. And what's interesting is you can have PCOS and endometriosis, which just broke my heart, which just must just be horrible. Okay, so how are you diagnosed, okay? Unfortunately, for PCOS, there are not any diagnostic tests, okay? So providers are going to ask you some questions. And so when you go in to see your doctor or your provider, they're going to ask you questions about your medical history. And mostly what they're going to be looking for are symptoms, okay? So they're going to ask you, you know, have you had any irregular periods or skip periods? Have you had any weight changes that they can't explain to something else? Have you had any hair changes or any acne? They will also ask about your family's medical history. And also, they're going to order some blood work and perform lab tests on the blood work. And they're going to be checking specifically for the sugar in your blood, so your insulin levels, and your androgen levels, okay? They can also perform a sonogram, which can be used to evaluate your ovaries. So they're going to do like a full workup, okay, to kind of check things out. Your doctor may also refer you to someone called a hormone specialist or an endocrinologist, okay? So an endocrinologist is someone who specializes in hormone conditions, okay, such as diabetes, PCOS, and other conditions. And they may refer you to these types of specialists to help kind of direct other tests and other workup that's needed to just make sure there's not something else going on or some other causes for the symptoms you're experiencing, and also to go ahead and confirm the diagnosis of PCOS. Okay, the big question that may be on everybody's minds is there a cure for PCOS? And unfortunately, at this time, there's not a cure. But there are wonderful ways to decrease or eliminate the symptoms and to feel better. So it's manageable, okay? Your doctor can prescribe different medications to treat various symptoms, such as the irregular periods, acne, the excess hair, and the elevated blood sugar. It's important to know a loss of as little as 5% of any excess weight that you're carrying can help women ovulate more regularly and also lessen other symptoms of PCOS. And it really is the best way to accomplish a healthy weight loss, of course, is going to be through proper nutrition and exercise. Again, weight loss can be very difficult to maintain, and it's important to keep trying to reduce the risk of other conditions. And some conditions that you're at risk for with PCOS would be diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. PCOS is also linked to having high blood pressure, prediabetes, and cholesterol, so high cholesterol, okay? So what are the treatments? The standard treatment for PCOS is going to be hormonal birth control, and usually these are oral contraceptives, so oral birth control pills. And the pills, they help you regulate your periods. They also improve excess hair growth. They improve acne, and they help lower those horrible male hormones that are all out of whack. So they help lower the androgen levels. They also do a good job at protecting the endometrium against abnormal cell growth, okay? And so they say here that older types of birth control pills have a lower risk of dangerous complications such as the development of blood clots, and they're preferable to treat PCOS over the newer types of birth control. Another medication that's commonly prescribed is a medication called metformin. Now, you may have heard of this before. It's usually the first medication prescribed to treat diabetes, okay? So if you think about everything we've talked about, this really makes sense because of the hormones that are affected by PCOS. The FDA has not approved the prescription, providers prescribing metformin to treat PCOS, but it works, okay? Because my provider tried to give it to me, but I don't like to take medication, so I said no, thank you. Metformin may be prescribed, and many doctors prescribe this medication so that your body becomes more sensitive to insulin, which in turn lowers insulin levels and androgen levels. It can also help with weight loss. So that's really cool with metformin. It really does help people lose weight. And it helps with the androgen levels, and it helps your body be able to utilize the insulin to be more receptive so that the insulin can encourage the blood sugars to go into the body to have more energy, which we talked about fatigue, okay? So if your body is able to utilize the blood sugar because the insulin, it's more receptive to insulin, boom, there goes your energy levels, right? So there's one symptom that's improving, boom, it's also helping you lose weight, and it's also helping with lowering your androgen levels. So if you have a birth control pill as well as metformin, those are often prescribed together. Metformin may also improve your menstrual pattern. So that's really interesting that it kind of helps regulate your period if you're someone who has an irregular period while having PCOS. Something called Clomid, it's an oral medication that's used to induce ovulation. So this is a medication that would be prescribed for someone who's having fertility issues, where you're trying your hardest with your partner and you just can't seem to get pregnant. It may be a possibility that you are suffering from infertility from this condition. And so the doctor, the fertility specialist, may prescribe you Clomid along with metformin. And it's shown, it says that they may prescribe the two medications together to help reduce the risk of something called ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, and this is a condition that can develop in people that are on fertility treatments. And so I'm going to include, like I always do, some wonderful links in my blog. And my blog is featured every Sunday after my broadcast on Victim Stoppers. And that's a wonderful social network where you can do things like set up neighborhood watches, you can share useful information, but you can get to know the wonderful host of our network much better, and you can see our blogs. We all do blogs, and we post really exciting things there. It's a network that you can join, and to get there, you go to www.victimstoppers.us, and that's where you'll find my blog, which is basically a recap of my podcast every Sunday. But it's also where you're going to get some information about my journey with dealing with my journey with PCOS. Okay. All right. Lifestyle changes are another way you can treat PCOS. If you achieve a weight loss of 5 to 10%, you can help regulate ovulation and your periods. And it says here, even the slightest bit of weight loss can improve your insulin sensitivity. So they're saying here that it's a link to your weight and being more receptive and sensitive to insulin producing your body. There are some drugs out there that can curb your androgen levels, and they are commonly prescribed to treat PCOS. Again, though, much like metformin, they are not FDA approved for PCOS treatment. And so these are drugs that, like, for example, the metformin, these are drugs that have, like, we call them dual purposes, where they're used to treat one thing, but then in turn, boom, they help treat other conditions, okay? So one of the androgen-lowering drugs that's commonly prescribed is a drug called spironolactone, okay? And this is an anti-androgen drug, and it's most often prescribed. So this is the one that lowers your androgens. And typically, a doctor would prescribe a patient at a higher dose, and it helps with lessening the appearance of hair, so the unwanted hair, okay? It makes the hair finer and lighter, okay? So it's not so dark, okay? And it also can improve acne. But unfortunately, the medication cannot help with the alopecia, so the hair loss, which is very difficult to treat, okay? There are some treatments also, ladies, that target the skin or hair more directly. So you can use a cream, a topical cream called Vanika, V-A-N-I-Q-A. There are some acne products out there, and there's cosmetic treatments because, again, remember the spironolactone is just going to make the hair appear finer and lighter. It is not going to stop the hair from coming. So you will have to use some methods, some cosmetic methods to get rid of the hair. So they have made some strides with hair removal for brown and black women. And so there are some laser treatments that help with more permanent removal of hair, as well as electrolysis. Electrolysis was not so great for me. She burned the hell out of me and it caused some scarring. So that didn't work. But I have talked to a few wonderful people who, for whatever reason, just for personal reasons, you know, there's this whole movement to like free your vagina, and lots of women want to be hair free on their vagina. So there's all these wonderful hair removal treatments that people are using. And so they've made some strides. I think you guys all know I am a reality show junkie. We call her Dr. Jackie. I cannot think of her last name, but she is on a show called Married to Medicine on Bravo, and she is actually an established doctor in Atlanta. And not only is she established, but she's an African American, and she's one of my sheroes because she is a 2 times breast cancer survivor. And Dr. Jackie has a wonderful clinic that I saw people like Candy Burris and other people that actually go to her and see her. I think also Tamar Braxton is a patient of hers as well. She has the laser, the approved laser for black skin, because initially, I remember when I was trying to look into hair removal, ideally the skin tone for that would be like the olive complexion with the dark hair. So if you think about that in this day and age, who do you think of? Well, you think of those Kardashian girls. And so they're the olive complexion with the dark hair. And so that's why you'll see them doing things like going to laser treatments to remove all that hair, because unfortunately certain ethnicities too are plagued with extra hair. Usually people in the Mediterranean, so like Armenian, Sicilian, other types, they'll have lots of excess unwanted hair. So those girls do the treatments. And I think when I checked into it, you go to a specialist and they evaluate you. You kind of tell them where they want the hair removed. And then they recommend these treatments. So it's costly initially. And then after that, it's just maintenance. Because I think those girls, they're just down. Once you kind of treat the area, the less hair comes back. And so you're down to just, I think, two treatments a year. So it is a good investment, you know, because people can be very judgmental about all the excess hair. So some other things that women with PCOS take as well to help manage their condition would be vitamins and supplements. And there's some complementary treatments as well. And so some of those treatments that are being researched for their effectiveness are cinnamon, something called myo-inositol. It's myo-inositol. Okay, vitamin D, B complex, and acupuncture is another favorite. Okay, I'm going to take a really quick break and take a quick interlude, and we'll come back and we'll talk about some additional health risks. We'll also talk about specialists that help you treat the condition, ways to be prepared to talk to your doctor if you suspect you have this condition, as well as some additional facts and some people that are, I guess they're kind of famous, not all of them. Some of them are just recognizable, I guess, that have this condition. All right, we'll be back shortly, okay, after this brief interlude. Tonight's edition of Healthy 365. I'm your host, Nicole Lee, and we're kind of wrapping up our discussion today about PCOS, which, as you're just tuning in now, is a condition that affects 10 million women and worldwide, and it's a condition, a metabolic condition, and so it affects their hormones. It's called polycystic ovarian syndrome, and we were talking about some additional health risks associated with the condition. And so women with PCOS, it says, are at a higher risk for pregnancy and delivery complications. And it says that these complications can be threefold. So they are at an increased risk for miscarriage in early pregnancy. They're also at an increased risk for gestational diabetes. And that's diabetes during pregnancy. That's what gestational diabetes is, which can lead to large babies. So anyone who has had gestational diabetes knows that you typically, the sign of that, you have really big babies. Also, you can develop preeclampsia, which is basically elevated blood sugar, and it causes body swelling after the 20th week of pregnancy. Women with PCOS are also at risk for preterm birth, so delivering your babies early, as well as a C-section delivery, okay? Another risk is fertility problems. So you're at risk of developing insulin resistance, prediabetes, which is basically, prediabetes is basically, there's a certain level for your blood sugar. Usually they do something called an A1C, and that tells them what your blood sugars have been over like a 6-month time span. So they will do like a fasting blood sugar or a quick A1C on you when they take your blood. And if your range is like 5-something up until like 6.1, I think you have to be 6.2 to be diabetic, but less than that, you're considered pre-diabetic, okay? And then diabetes, abnormal cholesterol and triglyceride levels, they're at risk for heart disease, stroke, endometrial cancer, okay? So they can have cancer of their endometrial lining of their uterus. So that's cancer of the lining of the uterus. They're at risk for obesity and sleep apnea. Now, it's important to note that anyone who has the condition sleep apnea, this can lead to a lower pain tolerance, high blood pressure, mood changes, heart disease, and increased weight. So that's how serious sleep apnea is. Here are some signs of sleep apnea. Excessive sleepiness during waking hours. So you know you got 8 to 10 hours of sleep, and you're still very tired, okay? Attention problems, so if you don't get enough sleep, you have trouble paying attention. You can be someone who suffers from chronic snoring and episodes of ceased breathing while sleeping. And this is usually something that's witnessed by another person. So they're, you know, they walk into the room when you're sleeping and they notice that you go for so many seconds or whatnot of not breathing. All of those things are signs of sleep apnea. Now, sleep apnea is so serious with the way that it affects your health, that if you suspect that you have a sleeping problem, you really need to talk to your doctor or healthcare provider, okay? It's really, really important, okay? Your doctor, in turn, will do something called a sleep study. And during that type of test, basically what they do in a controlled environment, okay, like a lab, okay, it's kind of set up like a hospital room. You're in a bed with all these leads and things on you. They basically monitor the activity of your brain, your heart, and your lungs while you sleep, okay? If you are diagnosed with sleep apnea or another sleep disorder, the doctor may then order something called a CPAP, which is basically a fun little mask that you wear, and it improves your ability. Basically, the machine makes sure that you get enough oxygen while you sleep, because that's important, okay? And so it improves your oxygen levels while you sleep, which helps you achieve better sleep, and in turn, you have better health, okay? Now, I found this interesting. It says another common thing that can happen or women can see with PCOS is bloating. Hello. Many women with PCOS, it says, have problems with bloating. And often they said that this is aggravated by certain foods that they consume. So there's a whole varied list of food culprits. The list includes, they said, foods that contain a carbohydrate called raffinose. And this particular carb does not digest well for some people, leading to gas production. So foods in this group include asparagus, beans, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, and cauliflower. Other foods that can cause bloating include dairy products, if you're someone who's lactose intolerant, certain whole grains, fruits, carbonated drinks, and products containing artificial sweeteners. It says that you can use a food tracker, to help you identify foods that may bother you so you can limit them or avoid them altogether, okay? Additional causes of fatigue. So I found this interesting. So some other causes of fatigue that may cause fatigue, so not just PCOS, because remember, PCOS can cause fatigue, and a lot of it's probably due to your body being insulin resistant. You know, it's your body not being reactive to the insulin, so your cells aren't getting the energy they need, okay? So additional causes of fatigue may also include an underactive thyroid, which is called hypothyroidism, low vitamin B12 levels or vitamin D levels, anemia, which means a low blood count or a low hemoglobin count. Also factors such as sleep problems and side effects of medication may also play a role. And they gave an example here that metformin may lower vitamin B12 levels, which they just said may cause fatigue. So it's really important for the doctor, like I said, when they diagnose you, they do a full blood workup just to make sure that there aren't some other things that may also be causing your fatigue in addition to maybe the PCOS contributing to that. Okay, so you may be wondering, hey, how do I talk to my doctor or my provider about PCOS? The main thing that I tell the patients that I serve is you want to be prepared when you go to your appointment, okay? And one of the ways that you can do that is things that you're concerned about, your fears, your concerns, your questions you have about the condition. Write those things down, okay? So go prepared to your appointment. So go prepared with questions. Write them down in advance of the appointment. Also, try to anticipate questions that your doctor may ask. This way you're prepared, kind of like the way you prepare for an interview, okay? Some of the questions that the doctors may ask you are things like, how have your symptoms been? What measures have helped? So those are things that you've done on your own. What changes have been made in your treatment regimen? So they're going to ask you things like that. So be prepared for those and have answers for them. So that way you guys can, first of all, you're prepared, so you're going to get the most out of your appointment. And second of all, you and your doctor can kind of come up with some strategies and some things that you can try. Like, okay, you know, Nicole, this hasn't been working, so let's try this and see, and I'll see you back. I want to see you back in like 2 weeks and see if that works. And I'll say, okay, doctor, I'll see you then, you know. It's important to know, and they said this is very common with women with PCOS, don't feel frustrated or discouraged. The fact that you have to see multiple doctors sometimes to manage this condition can make you feel overwhelmed and frustrated because each doctor wants to know and they ask the same questions over and over and over again. Now, here's an opportunity here that I talk to my patients about all the time. It is very helpful that if your provider, if they communicate within their care team, yes, they're going to ask you questions because that's their job to assess your mood, assess how you're doing. But you want to make sure when you have multiple doctors, you want to make sure that all of your specialists that you see are communicating with your primary care provider. They're keeping them in the loop because your primary care provider is so important to your health. Your primary care provider is like the conductor on your train of health, okay? So they're the leader. They're at the top, and they should be kept aware of everything. Even if you have another condition and you see another specialist more often, you still want to make sure you at least have a wellness visit with your primary care doctor and that they are being made aware of lab results from other doctors, prescribed medications, so that when your doctor asks you about these things, it's not that they don't have the information. It's that they're just kind of checking in with you to kind of see, are you still taking this? Are you still going to that doctor? And how do you feel? How are you doing today? Okay. Sometimes what's helpful is if you see a doctor within a network. So if the group is called, Healthy Network, okay, I'm just making up a name. And if your primary care provider is a part of that network, it's going to be so much easier for them to communicate with your specialist, with your heart doctor, with your specialist for the PCOS, with your gynecologist. They're going to be able to see everything because they're all planned on the same team. Also, when you're selecting a primary care provider, if you have like a preferred hospital, think about what's important to you. You know, if, for example, if you're in the Atlanta area and you prefer to go to Emory Hospital over Grady, you want to make sure that your doctor has privileges and is a doctor that goes to Emory, okay? If they go to Grady, then guess what? If you go to Emory, your doctor's not going to come see you when you're in the hospital or nobody from his group is going to come see you. Or it's going to be difficult to necessarily get the results if they don't have privileges. So that's all important to decide when you're selecting a primary care provider, okay? Now, some types of specialists who treat PCOS are primary care doctors. And I like to say primary care providers because it could be a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner or a medical doctor or primary care doctor. Other specialists that treat the condition are gynecologists. And we know that those are specialists that specialize in our reproductive system. Also, medical endocrinologists, those are hormone specialists, and they're generally considered the specialists for PCOS. So when you're looking for, okay, what type of specialist handles this condition? It is a medical endocrinologist, okay? Reproductive endocrinologists are fertility specialists. So these are people that are going to come on board if you want to have a child and you're having some challenges. So then you would get a reproductive endocrinologist on board. Dermatologists. You know, they study the skin disorders. We talked about acne, skin tags, the darkening of the skin, the hair. The dermatologist can help in this area. Psychologists and psychiatrists, hey, they said you can have anxiety, depression, mood swings. If you feel you need to talk to someone, always stay encouraged. Know that it's okay to ask for help and talk to someone who can kind of help you through if you hit a rough patch or, you know, you're not able to kind of function. Then it might be a good idea to talk to a psychologist or a psychiatrist to kind of help you balance things out. Having a hormone disorder can be very difficult. And through no fault of your own, you may just have extreme highs and lows and you don't know what to do. So talking to someone can really help you work through it. And sometimes they even prescribe you medicine. Sometimes they can help with things like you can do meditation to help with anxiety. You can do yoga. Exercising is going to improve your mood. Therapy is going to help. Another specialist that's going to help with PCOS is going to be a dietitian, okay? Here are some really additional facts about PCOS. September is PCOS Awareness Month, which is really awesome. Also, 1 in 10 women have the condition, which I found really interesting. Some other interesting facts are, despite PCOS being one of the most common endocrine disorders, okay, which just means hormonal disorders, PCOS receives less than 1.1% of funding from the National Institute of Health. So that is just so sad that it affects 10 million women and it receives the least amount of funding. Worldwide, PCOS affects 6 to 10% of women, making it the most common endocrine disorder in women of childbearing age. It says here, by the age of 40, 40% of women with PCOS will develop prediabetes or diabetes. It says here that the U.S. spends an estimated $4 billion annually to identify and manage PCOS. It also says women with PCOS can have monthly menstrual cycles and still have PCOS, okay? It also says here, I found this very interesting. It said eating disorders, including anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating, are common among women with PCOS, which I actually, in adolescence, when I think about the struggles, I mean, I've had some trouble with like anorexia and like binge eating. So I'm like, dude, it wasn't even my fault. So that's pretty interesting to know. It also says here that women with PCOS have higher rates of anxiety and depression than women without the syndrome. It says that PCOS is the most common cause of ovulatory infertility, so infertility directly relating to problems with ovulation. It says know your numbers, which we do definitely promote here. Your HDL, which a good way to remember your cholesterol, your good cholesterol, is H for happy. So your HDL or good cholesterol, changes to your diet and lifestyle can improve your levels, okay? And so it says that women with PCOS have a 70% prevalence of elevated triglycerides and very low HDL, okay? So know your numbers to know if you have the condition, if your good cholesterol is being affected. It says that women with PCOS have more testosterone and can build muscle easier than women without the syndrome. That's interesting. Oh, it says it's important that if you are going to take metformin or oral contraceptives, that you also take a B12 supplement, as the drug, and we talked about that, can interfere with the absorption of the vitamin. A lack of B12 can also cause permanent and serious problems. It's important to know that the follicles typically seen in PCOS are actually the result of a hormonal imbalance, not the cause. So the follicles didn't cause the condition. They developed as a result of the condition, okay? It says here that one of the earliest signs of elevated androgens, and so that's those male hormones that we talked about before, in adolescence with PCOS is acne. So your teen having acne, your adolescent, can be a sign of PCOS, okay? Women with PCOS may have difficulty breastfeeding and producing sufficient milk for their babies. It says here that eating protein and or fat-containing foods every 3 to 5 hours throughout the day may help to stabilize blood sugar levels and prevent cravings in PCOS. And regular exercise is an effective way to improve your insulin levels as well. Women with PCOS, as they get older, they're likely to experience more regular menstrual cycles, which is awesome. Fatty liver affects 15 to 55% of women with PCOS and can be improved by dietary changes. For optimal treatment, the optimal treatment for PCOS is multifactorial. So it involves diet and lifestyle modification, medications, and supplements. So multifactorial means all of those different measures to balance it. It says here that vitamin D, or a hormone and a vitamin, has been shown to play a role in insulin resistance and egg development. And sleep disturbances have been found to be twice as common in women with PCOS compared to those without it. So those are just a few little interesting facts that I found. I will include a link to a wonderful educational pamphlet that you guys can kind of look at. There's a whole bunch of wonderful foundations and support groups for people. For example, the one where I found great information was www.pcosaa.org. There is also a social network for women with PCOS. It's called mypcosteam.com, and you can sign up through your other media or sign up solely, I think a lot of times when you sign up for things, you can kind of link other media venues to the site to join. There's also a great site called the PCOS Challenge. There's something called Soul Sisters. I thought that was really cute. It's SoulCysters.com. It's a support community for women with PCOS. There's a foundation. There's a daily strength group. I'll include the link for that, Levenor.org, for adolescents that have the condition. Next week, be sure to tune in. We have the podcast for Healthy 365 every Sunday from 7 to 8:30. I don't know why I'm having trouble speaking today. From 7 to 8:30. So tune in next week. Again, be sure to check out my blog. And if you haven't already joined, be sure to join Victim Stoppers. It's a social network. That's www.victimstoppers.us. And also Yizer is a social like savings community. It's also a place, I think, where you can find like some recipes and stuff like that. And that is www.yizer.com. Also, in addition to Healthy 365 being on Sundays, be sure to check out Moving Forward, which is a wonderful show hosted by Dwayne Abernathy. It comes on Monday evenings. It's broadcasted here on this station from 8 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. And also be sure to check out the wonderful show Against All Odds. And that show is hosted by Renita Graves and Ayana Muhammad. And that's Thursday nights from 8 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. Okay? So be sure to check them out and also join the networks for the blogs and everything. I wanted to share our inspirational quote, but before I do that, I want to thank all of you again for sharing this time with me, and I hope that I was able to kind of enlighten you a little bit and share. If you ever want to call in or if you have a topic that you're interested in, we have some social networks, preferably Victim Stoppers would be the best way. You can kind of blog and do your, hey, I'd like to hear about this topic, or I want to know more about this. You can always call in to our show as a guest. You can call 516-418-5872. We'd love to hear from you, as well as I know that we do have some other, the more common social platforms too. I know there's a Twitter and Facebook and other things like that. We also have a YouTube channel, which is digitalguardtv.com. So it's www.digitalguardtv.com. But we're on YouTube now. So you can see some great videos and things from our group and our team from that. And you can get more information on that. I wanted to wrap up the show today with a little bit of positivity and inspiration. So my quote today comes from, she is the epiphany, I don't care that she's gone, she's the epiphany to me of strength, of the very essence of woman. She was smart, beautiful, courageous, intelligent, unapologetic, fearless, and she was so down to earth and approachable. I love people that are just, they don't care what you think about them, or they don't let their past decisions or anything define them. She was just like a pillar of strength. I'm talking about the incomparable, may she rest in heaven, Maya Angelou. So she's one of my favorite people ever. I have a beautiful aunt that loves to recite her poetry to me. She writes poetry, and we just sit and talk about the beauty that was Maya, the essence of Maya Angelou. And so I chose one of the quotes tonight from her. She has so many to choose from. And it goes, "My mission in life is not merely to survive, but to thrive, and do so with some passion, some compassion, and some humor, and some style." I'll read that again because I love her. "My mission in life is not merely to survive, but to thrive, and do so with some passion, some compassion, some humor, and some style." And that she did. And that was a quote from our beautiful, wonderful sister in heaven, Maya Angelou. She will forever remain in our hearts, and the contributions that she made to this world are incomparable. We love you, Maya Angelou, and we miss you dearly. I want to thank you again for tuning in. Tune in again next week at the same time from 7 to 8:30. I'm going to kind of end with just some cute little instrumental music, and also followed by a wonderful word from our sponsor who makes it all possible. And thank you all again. Have a wonderful, blessed week ahead and a great night.
having a camera system is not enough. We are told that surveillance cameras are effective crime-fighting tools because they deter and or record evidence of criminal activity. But this information is false. Deterrence only works on some people, not all. One only has to keep up with the news being reported from around the world, and we see day after day of overnight burglaries or smash and grabs of businesses when they're closed. And these businesses have cameras. Cameras are great to record crimes, and they give you a record after a crime is committed. Criminals don't care if they are caught on video. They only care if they get caught in the act of a crime. You may be asking, why use Digital Guard remote monitoring to protect your business or home? Why hire Digital Guard remote monitoring instead of hiring a security guard? What makes Digital Guard remote monitoring different from alarm monitoring companies? The answers to your questions are... What is the answer? The answer is Digital Guard Live Surveillance Monitoring. Digital Guard Live Surveillance Monitoring has been used to improve or replace traditional security guard services for many businesses. Our solution is a proactive and more effective way to preventing the act of a crime at less than 75% of the cost of having security guards. Digital Guard Live Surveillance Monitoring eliminates all of those associated fees that come with hiring a security guard staff. Digital Guard Live Surveillance Monitoring solves the problem of businesses burglarized overnight when they're closed. Our command center views live real-time video from any installed camera on our network. Upon viewing an attempted security breach, we can either dispatch a security response unit or immediately contact law enforcement. Digital Guard remote monitoring will improve safety, reduce accidents, reduce shrinkage, increase bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give business owners a sense of peace. Criminals don't care if they are caught on video. They only care if they get caught in the act of a crime. Be proactive, not reactive, when it comes to protecting your business or home. To get started, contact us at 888-40-5777, option 2, or visit www.digitalguardlive.com.